Good afternoon. After we're done with the briefing, Leila Zarugi, the special representative of the Secretary General on Children in Armed Conflict, will be our guest. She will be here to present the Secretary General's report on children in armed conflict. Then at 2:45 here in this room, we'll have the Department of Economic and Social Affairs Division on Sustainable Development will be here to launch the latest Global Development Report. From Iraq, the Secretary General's Special Representative in that country, Nikolai Mladenov, expressed his regret that Iraq's newly elected Council of Representatives was not able to reach an agreement on naming a speaker today. He called upon all political leaders to set aside their differences and elect a speaker during the next session, which is due to be held next week. That step would allow the parliament to elect a new president, move forward on the government formation process, and engage in resolving the legitimate concerns of various communities. Mr. Mladenov again warned that any delay or failure to observe the deadline set by the Iraqi constitution will be detrimental to the country's integrity. And more information is available on the mission's website. Also from Iraq, the mission released today the new casualty figures for June. It says that at least 2,417 Iraqis have been killed and another 2,287 have been injured in acts of terrorism and violence during the month. The mission reports that this includes more than 1,500 civilian deaths, the highest toll in 1 month since 2007. Nikolai Mladenov said the staggering number of civilian casualties in 1 month points to the urgent need for Iraqi leaders to restore security and address the root causes of violence through a constitutional political process. At today's briefing in Geneva, the UN High Commissioner for Human Rights condemned in the strongest terms the surge in violence and killings in Iraq. The office continues to strongly urge all parties to the conflict to respect international human rights and international humanitarian law, and has called on the Iraqi authorities to hold accountable those responsible for violations. And also earlier this morning, you will have seen the Secretary General had expressed his deep gratitude to the government of Saudi Arabia for their generosity following the government's contribution of $500 million to the UN for life-saving humanitarian efforts in Iraq. The Secretary General welcomes the timely funding, which will help UN agencies and partners support millions of Iraqis impacted by the ongoing conflict. And as you know, yesterday the Secretary General condemned in the strongest terms the murder of three Israeli teenagers who were abducted on June 12th in the West Bank and said there can be no justification for the deliberate killing of civilians. The Secretary General believes the heinous acts by enemies of peace aims to further entrench divisions and distrust and to widen the conflict. It must not be allowed to succeed, he said. He called on all parties to abide by their obligations under international law and to refrain from any actions that could further escalate this highly tense situation. And the full statement is online. Also today, the UN Special Coordinator for the Middle East Peace Process, Robert Seri, added that his thoughts are with the bereaved families of the three Israeli teenagers who were killed. He said the perpetrators must be brought to justice, as any association or support with terror or violence must be rejected and will have consequences for those concerned. In this regard, Mr. Seri continues to be deeply troubled by statements from Hamas representatives suggesting support for this heinous act. And in Geneva, the High Commissioner for Human Rights also mourned the killings and called on all Israelis and Palestinians to exercise maximum restraints and to prevent the situation from worsening further. The Human Rights Office reiterated its call for strict adherence to all international law by relevant actors and to avoid the further loss of life and injuries and negative impact on human rights. And that full statement is available online. Turning to food issues, the head of the World Food Program and the UN Refugee Agency warned today that funding difficulties compounded by security and logistical problems in some countries have forced cuts in rations for nearly 800,000 refugees in Africa. At a meeting in Geneva, the WFP Executive Director, Ertharin Cousin, and the High Commissioner for Refugees, Antonio Gutierrez, made an urgent plea for $186 million to allow WFP to restore full rations and prevent further reductions elsewhere through December 2014. For its part, UNHCR needs $39 million for nutrition support it provides to malnourished and vulnerable refugees in Africa. Across Africa, 2.4 million refugees in some 200 sites in 22 countries depend on regular food aid from WFP. A third of those have seen reductions in their rations. Supplies have been cut by at least 50% for nearly 450,000 refugees in remote camps and other sites in the Central African Republic, Chad, and South Sudan. Another 338,000 in Liberia, Burkina Faso, Mozambique, Ghana, Mauritania, and Uganda have seen their rations reduced between 5 and 43%. And from South Sudan, our humanitarian colleagues say that aid operations in Bentiu and Unity States continue at full pace, though the security situation in the area remains tense. Aid agencies continue to scale up water and sanitation, with now one latrine for every 100 people sheltering in the UN base and 7 liters of water per person per day. Aid agencies have launched operations in Nyaldu, southwest of Bentiu, where many of the displaced arriving in Bentiu live. Initial reports indicate that the food security situation is extremely worrying. The first loads of relief supplies flew into that area yesterday, with distribution starting today. Humanitarian agencies have also launched operations in Koch, further south, which is one of the areas that has been harder to reach during the crisis. Humanitarian agencies aim to assist 3.8 million people by the end of the year. So far, 1.9 million people across South Sudan have received some form of assistance this year. And from Somalia, the Secretary General Special Representative in that country, Nicholas Kay, today congratulated the people of Somalia as they celebrated their 54th Independence Day. He called on all Somalis to unite and to continue working together to build a peaceful future in their country. And that statement is available online. From Pakistan, the UN and other non-governmental organizations are helping nearly 470,000 people uprooted in North Waziristan in Pakistan near the country's border with Afghanistan. The displacement of these people, three-quarters of whom are women and children, was triggered by the Pakistani military's operations against armed insurgents in the area. Nearly 100,000 people have also fled to Afghanistan's Khost province to seek shelter. The Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs says food, medicine, sanitation services, among others, have been provided to the displaced. And today, the Secretary General has appointed Major General Dilali Johnson Saki of Ghana as the Chief Military Observer and head of the mission for the UN Military Observer Group in India and Pakistan. He succeeds Major General Choi of the Republic of Korea, who completed his 2-year assignment on June 16th. The Secretary General is grateful for his contribution to UN peacekeeping. Major General Saki most recently served as force commander with the UN mission in South Sudan. And we have more information in my office. And just to flag that in a LinkedIn influencer video interview released this morning, the Secretary General discussed his priorities, including why he has taken on climate change, gender equality, and mobility at the UN. The interview is available on the Secretary General's LinkedIn influencer account and on all UN social media platforms. And tomorrow we'll be joined here by John Ging, Operations Director at OCHA, and Ted Chaiban, Director of Emergency Programs for UNICEF. They will be here to brief on their recent visit to Somalia and Yemen. And at 12:30, you'll have your regular briefing from the Ambassador, the President of the Security Council for July, Ambassador Richard Gasana of Rwanda, who will brief you on the program of work. That's it for me. Edie.
Steph, the Fifth Committee met until 3 o'clock in the morning, and they were unable to reach agreement on a peacekeeping budget, which means the Department of Peacekeeping is currently unfunded. What impact is this going to have on UN peacekeeping operations?
Well, as we understand, the discussions are still ongoing. We're following them closely. What is critical and what is important for us, for the Department of Peacekeeping, is to have a stable source of funding. But we're obviously following the discussions closely. Yes, Matthew.
Follow up on that. In covering it, it seems that Undersecretary General Ladsous and a guy called Rick Martins briefed the G77, and among the questions that arose were this $200 million in cuts which are being proposed. Mr. Ladsous said that the cuts in UNAMID and Darfur will definitely be undertaken. And I wanted to know, One, can you describe how do those cuts have to do with what many describe as an upsurge in violence there? And two, have to do with what many have called for a review of the veracity or completeness of reporting of UNAMID of government killings in Darfur?
Well, I think on UNAMID, on the reports, as you know, there's been a strategic review undertaken, and we're obviously taking a look at the mission. On the size and scope of the missions, the mandates are decided by the Security Council, and as I said, we're just keeping an eye on the Fifth Committee as it continues.
But the $200 million figure, does that come from the so-called partners, donor nations, or does it come from DPKO, the Secretary?
If I have more, I'll give that to you. Great. Yes.
Thank you. I apologize if you already have spoken about this topic in the past weeks. I've been away for a while. But it appears that the U.S. government has intelligence about some association between the al-Nusra Front in Syria and al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula to create new non-metallic explosives. This is a report.
I'm sorry, you need to speak a little louder.
Oh, you don't hear me?
No, go ahead. That's better. Okay. Yeah, put the mic a little closer.
Since when? From the very beginning?
Just the second part.
Okay. They are supposedly jointly working to produce a new and creative design for non-metallic explosives. This has been going around in the media for a while. And in Europe, we are all expecting to see if the United States is going to ask for extra security at the airports right now in the summer. Has this report about al-Nusra and al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula cooperating in Syria, has it arrived on the desk of the Secretary General? Do you have anything on it?
I'm not aware of the particular report on this new type of explosive, but I'll see. I'll ask around.
Could you please? Thank you,
Mr. Avni.
Yes, I heard what you said about Seri and his concern about Hamas. The question is, since Israel has blamed Hamas and pointed the finger at Hamas as the perpetrator of the killing, does the United Nations share that part of it? I mean, does the United Nations have any inkling as to whether Hamas is responsible or not?
No, I think what Mr. Seri was referring to were statements that were made in the media.
Follow up on this. Since there was in this room some doubt as to whether there was a kidnapping at all, since today there was a tape released just now in which one of the kids is whispering in a phone call to police that we've been kidnapped, isn't it time that maybe the office of the United Nations in Israel would stop distancing itself from every statement made by the Israelis?
I don't really understand what you mean by distancing. I think that
last week there was a question here whether there was a kidnapping at all, and answer was that there was no independent verification.
I would refer you to the statements have been made in this room or in the Security Council, including here just a few minutes ago by me when we referred to them as having been abducted, and I would leave it at that. Yes, sir.
Thank you. Would you please provide us with some details on the exchange between Mr. Feltman and Mrs. Bouthena Shaban in Oslo? Thank you.
I will look into that.
So are you aware of it or not?
I will look into it. Yes, Matthew.
Sure. I'll ask about Ukraine and also DRC. In Ukraine, obviously, as the president Poroshenko has renewed airstrikes and artillery strikes and has said, it's kind of a quote I want to ask you about where he says, we will free the land from parasites.
I expect parasites. To have some language of Ukraine very shortly.
What about this word parasite? Are you going to address that?
I expect to have some language on the Ukraine shortly. Okay. Do you have a second question?
Yeah, I do, actually. I wanted to ask, on Friday when I'd asked you about this reports or complaint to the Security Council Section Committee of MINUSCO flying Mr. Ramouli around, you'd said it was at the request of a group of special envoys. So I was wanting to know, who, which special envoys? Apparently, Mary Robinson and maybe the Belgium's own envoy. Was Russ Feingold part of it?
Yes, my understanding, the U.S. was part of it, and the complaint that you referred to was about reportedly the reports that he had flown outside of the country, which, as you know, was not the case,
sure.
Contrary to what was reported.
There's a whole paragraph in the complaint letter that says that why did MINUSCO undertake to fly to Goma, to Kisangani, and Kinshasa? And the reason I keep asking about this, it seems like it's a use of U.N. resources. Mm-hmm. So it should just knowing whether this flight took
sure.
place.
If I have something on that, I will share with you. Yes, sir.
Since yesterday, of course, the Israelis have been waging some kind of attacks on Gaza. And almost since the abduction happened, more than 9 Palestinians have been killed. Around 600 have been arrested. Are there any mediations being done from the United Nations in order to stop the aggression against Gaza and the population in the West Bank?
Both the Secretary General in statements and Mr. Feltman have called on restraint and have called for the full adherence to international law in these operations, and have flagged the detainees that have been taken on by the Israelis in Security Council briefings.
I have another question regarding the Iraqi refugees. Has Saudi Arabia opened the borders for any Iraqi refugees or Syrian refugees since the outbreak of this crisis?
I will check with UNHCR, but my feeling is that you know the answer to the question you've asked. I didn't mean that. I will check with UNHCR, and in the meantime, I will get our guests. Thank you. Great. Before we start, I just got some answers on Ukraine, so if you don't mind, I'll just read it on into the record since everybody is still here. The Secretary General is following with grave concern reports of renewed fighting in eastern Ukraine. He is extremely disappointed that the unilateral ceasefire declared by Ukrainian President Petro Poroshenko never achieved the momentum needed to end the violence. He renews his call on all sides in Ukraine not to give up the idea of a functioning ceasefire and works towards a definitive cessation of violence through a continued political and diplomatic process. The Secretary General reiterates that a continuation of hostilities can only further exacerbate an already precarious situation. He strongly condemns the persistent, unlawful violence at the hands of armed militia groups and enjoins them to lay down their weapons and express their grievances peacefully and in accordance with international law. On that note, Ms. Urugi, welcome. We're glad to have the Secretary General Special Representative on Children in Armed Conflict join us. And I will leave it to you. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you, Stefan. Thank you, everyone. I have the pleasure today to come to the noon briefing to present the report, the annual report, the Secretary General annual report on children armed conflict that covers the period from January to December 2013. The report, as you know, was prepared with the collaboration of UN and NGO partners, in particular in the country task force on monitoring and reporting in the countries on the children armed conflict agenda. I would like to emphasize that without their input and the work they are doing on the ground, it would be hard for us to present a report today. And would like to thank them all. Let me just give you an overview on the content of the report. We have 23 situations of concern, 17 on the agenda of the Security Council, and 6 other situations of concern. Unfortunately, 59 parties are listed in 15 situations of concern, 14 countries and the LRA, 8 are government forces, and 51 non-state actors. This year, one new country situation has been added to the report with the listing of Boko Haram in Nigeria. Chad is no longer on the list, has no listed party, but still remain on the agenda, on our agenda, according to our method of work. Our concern. As you know, in 2013, 3 major situation crises, maybe a terrible crisis, 2013, South Sudan, CAR, and ongoing conflict in Syria. The violence continues still in the 3 countries in 2014. There were also peaks of violence in Iraq and Nigeria in 2013. The situation has gotten even worse in 2014. South Sudan. I'm just returning from South Sudan, and the situation is extremely worrisome. Recruitment and use of children is widespread. And all the grave violations that we monitor are committed against the children in South Sudan. As you know, the government of South Sudan have signed an action plan to end the recruitment and use of children by the SPLA, the South Sudanese army, in 2012. The gain, unfortunately, made by the government to address grave violations against children have been reversed since the last crisis started on 15 December 2013. During my visit, the government recommitted to action plan. Earlier also in Addis, when I met with Rick Machar, he also committed in writing to end violation against children in the SPLM in opposition. In this report, you would see that they are formally on the list as of today. So what we are expecting now is that both the government and the opposition translate their commitment to effective implementation to end the violation that are affecting children. I would like to emphasize also the importance of meaningful and comprehensive reintegration program for the children of South Sudan. Another situation of concern, another crisis, the security situation in Iraq. As we all know, and I think I just would like to emphasize that the recent advances made by ISIS, the Islamic State of Iraq and Syria, are creating extremely volatile and dangerous conditions for children. ISIS has been listed in our report since 2011 for recruitment and use, killing and maiming, and also attacks on schools and hospitals, attacks on schools particularly. In 2013, we saw also the highest number of casualties reported since 2008, and doubled the number from 2012. Close to 8,000 civilians were killed, including at least 248 children. ISIS and Al-Qaeda in Iraq were allegedly responsible for most incident, and as we all know, it is worse now. We are on the verge of a catastrophe. and you see that the crisis of last year were preparing something that we are now noticing. Syria. Syria, of course, continues to be an extremely dangerous place to be a child, unfortunately. Again, in 2013, we have documented widespread grave violation against children. The conflict and violence in Syria reached unprecedented levels during 2013. No sign of improvement since the beginning of the year, and no political solution in sight. Despite armed groups, fluid command structure, and ever-changing alliances among armed non-state actors in Syria, the Secretary General identified and listed four new parties for recruitment and use of children, and in two cases, killing and maiming of children, and these are ISIS, Jabhat al-Nusra, Ahrar al-Sham, and YPG, the Kurdish People Protection Unit. The report also emphasized the situation in Israel, Palestine. During the year, it was our concern was more on the detention of Palestinian children. Since what happened this few weeks, of course, the extremely concerned with the recent killing of the three Israeli teenagers. This is crime, and it is unacceptable. I add my voice to the Secretary General, who has called on all parties to refrain from an escalation of violence. In particular, I'm worried also that at least one child has died in the surge operation and subsequent exchange. Again, I stress that all parties should show maximum restraint to prevent more child casualties. Another situation in Nigeria, as I mentioned in the beginning, in northern Nigeria, through 2013, Boko Haram has increased attacks on schools, killing and maiming dozens of children, as well as other grave violations. As you all know, this continues, unfortunately, in 2014. Boko Haram's listing for killing and maiming and attacks on schools and hospitals is part of the broader response of the international community to target the extremist group responsible for the escalation of violence in northern Nigeria. The listing triggers the establishment of the monitoring and reporting mechanism, our tool mandated by the Security Council to collect and verify information and take action. Central African Republic, the crisis in Central African Republic has had and continues to have a huge impact on children. Through 2013, children were victims of all six grave violations in total impunity. In 2013, the Seleka Coalition, dismantled in September and known after as the ex-Seleka, committed widespread violations. The anti-Balaka local self-defense militia became more organized and also committed widespread violations, including targeting, killing, and maiming of children, sexual violence. In 2014, the children of Kar continue to face unspeakable violence, a deadly mix of attacks and retaliation motivated by religion, a worsening humanitarian crisis, and complete lack of law and order continues to plague the country. There is an urgent need to break the climate of impunity, to serve as a deterrent to the ongoing violence. This is really something that we have to push. The establishment of MINUSCA in April 2014 came at a critical time and represent an important opportunity to protect children affected by the conflict in the Central African Republic, we hope. Chad, let me, maybe I talk about a lot of terrible things. Let me also say what we could achieve with the little that we have to push the agenda and ensure better protection for children. So I think one is the delisting of Chad. Chad troops' contribution to, as you know, we seize the opportunity of Chad troop contribution to the UN peacekeeping mission in Mali. This created a momentum that helped in fully implement the action plan signed in 2011, and we are pleased to say that they are no more listed. Also, the campaign Children Not Soldiers, you know that we launched the global campaign in March 2014 to end the recruitment and use of children by government forces. You know also that 8 governments are listed for recruitment and use, government forces listed for recruitment and use, Afghanistan, Chad at the time, DRC, DR Congo, Myanmar, Somalia, South Sudan, Sudan, and Yemen. 6 had signed an action plan at the time of the launch. Since the launch of the campaign, Yemen signed action plan in May, and Chad has completed the implementation of its action plan. They are no longer, as I said, listed. Unfortunately, setback, the conflict in South Sudan has erased progress accomplished in 2012. The Security Council formally endorsed the campaign in Resolution 2143. The goal is to rally support and expertise to ensure that these countries achieved their goal of children-free security forces by 2016. Another initiative that we took in the office with our partners is, of course, to address the issue of attacks on schools and hospitals, as it is becoming a common feature of any conflict that we are seeing, unfortunately. So we are strengthening our response and published a guidance note, as you know, to help all involved be well equipped to monitor and report and respond. It will be. It was launched in English, but it will be also available very soon in Arabic and in French. So this is for us an opportunity. We have 8 parties listed in Afghanistan, CAR, DRC, Iraq, Syria, and Nigeria for attacks on schools and hospitals. And we have also another big concern, the military use of schools. We are pleased to report that progress, notably in Resolution 2143, as I mentioned, to strengthen our tools to address also this concern, the military use. And lastly, non-state actors. I would like to emphasize that we are engaging with non-state actors. It's not that we are only working with government. When we see who are the non-state actors, they are in the majority in the same country that we work with to end the recruitment and use in their armed forces. And this will give us the opportunity, the legitimacy, but also the tools and the framework to allow us to act on non-state actors. Some we are already engaged with, as you know. For example, we have MILF in Philippines, where we have an action plan. We are implementing this action plan with the Moro Islamic Liberation Front. During my visit, I met David Yaoyao, and he also commits to release the children that that are in his ranks. We are also working with the Free Syrian Army. They expressed their desire to commit to an action plan, and we are pushing for an initial tangible action, such as issuing a command order prohibiting the recruitment and use of children. And as I said, we also have the engagement of the opposition, SPLA in opposition with Riek Machar, that signed a commitment with us. We emphasize the fact that the best way to fight the recruitment and use and all the other violations against children is to fight properly and with the appropriate tools, the impunity, and to ensure also proper reintegration of children, because if they are not protected, commander that recruits them punished, then the recruitment will continue. So these are the briefing, and I am ready for your questions.
Thank you very much, Ms. Zerugi.
Yes. Welcome on behalf of the United Nations Correspondents Association. My name is Evelyn Leopold, and the first question, is there a trend, or has it always been this way, of religion being used as an excuse for rape? ISIS is starting it against Christians in Iraq. Certainly the LRA Christian sect took, quote, wives, which is another excuse for rape. And now Boko Haram, there's no doubt by those who have escaped that all this religion is garbage, because the main purpose seems to be rape.
Thank you. I just would like to emphasize that it's very easy for people to have an argument to justify what they are doing. For example, not only for the rape. Look about what is the killing in Central African Republic, for example. Two communities that lived together for centuries suddenly start killing each other on religion lines. So I think we have first to make sure that what is behind, what is visible. And, of course, if you use religion, people that are illiterate in many settings, people are, for example, I was in South Sudan, 80% of illiteracy. So it's illiteracy, poverty, then it's easy to manipulate people, and religion is used as an argument. I think there is no religion that allows for rape, and Christianity or Islam or any other religion don't allow. Even if we talk about Islam, no one is allowed to have a sexual relationship outside of marriage. So this could not be an argument that I can rape a Christian or can rape a Jew. So this is not acceptable. And the majority of those that are facing this treatment are Muslim themselves. And I saw it in many places. The Seleka were raping not only the Christian, but also the Muslim. I read yesterday an article coming from what ISIS is doing. And they are doing so terrible things, not only rape, but also what they are doing to children. The way they are asking children to commit killing against Christian, against Jew, against non-Sunni, because this is just an argument. So for me, we have to hold these people accountable, and we have to make sure that those who maybe could be manipulated by religion understand that this is not religion.
Can I follow that up? I mean, it's not illegal in many countries to have child brides, which is another reason for rape.
To have
child brides, which is basically rape also. Yeah.
That's why we have also to fight the early marriage, because this is also something that justifies what is happening in northern Nigeria, for example, but in other places in Africa, in the Arab world. We are seeing it in Syria, we are seeing it everywhere. So I think this is something that we have all together to work on, and I was this morning I was very pleased to see that the African Union is taking an initiative to address the issue of early marriage. This is something that we have to do in the Arab world also and in other places. So I agree with you.
Thank you, Ms. Zarugi. Edith Lederer from the Associated Press. First, a factual question. In the release I'm reading, you say, we've documented the cases of children recruited and used by seven national armies and 50 armed groups. And in your presentation, you were talking about eight governments and 51 armed groups. What got added between the time this release was written and your speech?
In the release, what is put?
Seven national armies and 50 armed groups.
No, seven and 50, 51. Seven? Because, that's no, if we talk about recruitment, then we have seven. Recruitment and use of children, we have seven because a child is not anymore listed. So they were eight, now they are seven for recruitment. Then if you add other violation, there are eight still. Because in the past we have nine. Syria, the government, the forces of Syria, they are not recruited, listed for recruitment, but they are listed for maiming and killing, sexual violence, and attacks on schools and hospitals.
Okay. Now my question is, how does the situation for children being recruited to fight in 2013 compared to 2012 or 2011? Is it getting worse? Is it improving slightly? Is it about the same, the overall picture?
I can say it's like this, because we have, for example, people that made progress, and then you have a crisis, and the same people that we released, they are recruited. That's what happened in South Sudan. I saw it myself. You can imagine that I was in the country. I was in the north of the country, in Gumruk. I was in Bentiu, and I saw myself children with their guns. So this is something that in some country we have progress, but we are seeing what is happening today. For example, the image coming from Iraq. Very small children with guns. So it's something that is, for me, linked to the conflict. And that's why for a long time I was saying the image of child soldier is not the image of an African teenager with an AK. It's something that is linked to the conflict, and it is the impunity. And because of the impunity and the people that recruit children can even come and claim gain out of it. So I think the impunity must end. Those who are recruiting children, whatsoever be the reason, they must be held accountable, and they must not be accepted in a table of negotiation, bringing the children as to gain politically or militarily at the table of negotiation. That's why we are also saying that this must be part of any political mediation and any negotiation and also peace agreement.
Thank you. Matthew, and then Yizar, and then Kevin.
Sure. Matthew Lee, Intercity Press, on behalf of the Free UN Coalition for Access. Thanks for the briefing. I wanted to ask you about Syria and DRC.
Yes.
When the report came out in May, what jumped out to me was obviously you're talking about a variety of groups, but a number of battalions that you say are FSA-affiliated, Free Syrian Army-affiliated.
Mm-hmm.
The reason is because, obviously, there's a large discussion now about arming, providing training and arms to vetted Syrian opposition, which at least the Syria coalition seems to think means the Free Syrian Army. So I wanted to know, what's this? I mean, it seems to say there's at least three or four examples given, and it says children as young as 14 receive weapons training and are paid 4,000 to 8,000 Syrian pounds a month. What's been the progress on that? Would you still say that these Free Syrian Army-linked groups are recruiting and paying child soldiers? And if so, do you think that they should receive $500 million in I mean, maybe you won't speak to that, but mm-hmm. there's a U.S. law that says child soldier yes. prevention. And the other, and I can do DRC now or after you answer that.
Go ahead.
Okay, and DRC, it's pretty straightforward. I noticed in it that there seems to still be children being separated from the FARDC, the Congolese army. And although it seems maybe the trend is down, but it said something like, you know, 113 children were separated. Are they still recruiting, or is it a matter of people sort of slipping through the gap? Mm-hmm. How would you characterize that?
Okay. Thank you. First of all, with regard to Syria, you see that this year, first of all, last year it was the FSA. This year, first of all, we identified at least four groups that we consider we have enough information that as a trend they could be listed. It's a Nusra, ISIS, Ahrar al-Sham, and the YPD, the Kurdish